This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss the historic vote by Amazon warehouse workers on Staten Island to unionize. The final vote just came down in the past hour or so. It is the first Amazon warehouse to unionize in the country. Today's guest, journalist Stephen Greenhouse, tweeted, "In my 25 years writing about labor, the union victory at the Amazon warehouse in Staten Island is by far the biggest, beating the odds David versus Goliath unionization win I've seen. A fired Amazon worker took on Amazon's union busters and unionized an 8,000 worker warehouse." Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years, spending his last 19 years there as its labor and workplace reporter. He is the author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
Well, great to have you, Stephen. My phone is still blowing up with breaking news about these Amazon workers unionizing. They really made history here.
They really did. It's, the first Amazon warehouse in the U.S. to unionize. And I don't think a single labor expert in the United States of America predicted that this newfangled union, the Amazon Labor Union, would win this unionization election. And because Amazon is so ferociously, fiercely anti-union, and it's very hard to win an election at a humongous workplace with 8,000 workers. It's much easier to win at a Starbucks with 30 workers. But they did a great job winning over the workers, talking to them at bus stops, giving them free pizza, giving out T-shirts, and really kind of jazzing up, taking a younger generation with so many young workers now being interested in unions. And they kind of tapped into this electricity and won. And it's really a remarkable and, I think, historic win, because, I'd say Walmart and Amazon are known as the two most anti-union companies in the country. They're extremely aggressively anti-union. And, for this one fired Amazon worker, Christian Smalls, to begin this effort a year ago, it looked like a moonshot, an unequipped, under-equipped, underfunded guy was taking on this mighty, mighty colossus with, $470 billion in annual revenues and, run by the world's second richest man. And he still managed to win. And I think that shows that a lot of Amazon workers think, maybe the pay is okay, maybe the benefits are okay, but the job essentially is lousy. It's strenuous. It's highly stressful. I don't have enough time to go to the bathroom. And Amazon tells us, we don't need a union. But these workers see, is Amazon doing anything to really make their unpleasant jobs better? And guess what? These workers realized probably the best way to try to improve our lives at Amazon is to have a union. So thus, today's historic vote.
Stephen, you have interviewed Christian Smalls. He's been on this show once. We're hoping to get him again next week.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know, right? Although he did say when he was talking today, he said, "I'd love to talk to the media just to really get the word out about how we did this." So let's just talk about that. Bloomberg just wrote a piece about Christian, writing about how he used to work at Amazon, and you can tell us the background about what happened to him when he really spoke up during COVID. He lost it. He was fired, right?
Yeah. So he was kind of an exemplary worker at Amazon. He helped train people. Chris is a very athletic guy. So he would pride himself that maybe the quota was handling 250 items an hour and he'd handle 400. And now in retrospect, he blames himself saying, crap, because I did such a good job that helped increase the overall quotas for everybody. So then came the pandemic, and he and many other Amazon workers in Staten Island, where he worked and elsewhere, were upset that, in their view, Amazon wasn't doing nearly enough to protect workers from COVID. When coworkers got COVID, Amazon wouldn't tell them that, the guy, the woman working right next to you got COVID, and that upset them. And they felt that the cafeteria, the lunchroom was way too crowded. People were way too close to each other. So Christian Smalls organized and led this protest at Amazon. And they fired him right after he led the protest. And what reason did Amazon give for firing him? It said that he violated social distancing rules. So the guy who led the effort to say Amazon wasn't doing enough to ensure social distancing, he got fired. And the New York Attorney General filed suit against Amazon saying, you know, you fired him illegally. You fired him because he was exercising his legal right to protest about unsafe conditions. So Christian Smalls became a hero, and he also became very pissed off. He was angry at Amazon. He was trying to make Amazon improve its safety measures on COVID, and it you know, dragged its feet. And he said, I'm going to try to do something about it. So like almost like a Don Quixote, he went out and said, I am going to try to unionize this plant. And I was like the first journalist to do a big piece on his unionization effort about a year ago. And to tell the truth, I thought this was an extreme long shot. But, you know, part of the genius of Christian Smalls is he got some co-workers, some friends from when he worked at Amazon, get very active in the unionization drive. And they did this wonderful job speaking to people in break rooms, passing out flyers in break rooms, giving free pizza, delivering lunches to the workers, having picnics outside, talking constantly to the workers in Staten Island who came by public bus because many of them, especially in an expensive place like New York City, can't afford cars. So there was this huge effort. And I think, you know, Christian Smalls, his co-leader, Derek Palmer, these are nice guys. People like them. They're popular. You know, they had these picnics. They played, you know, hip hop music. And I think in contrast, you know, Amazon is kind of seen like the ogre. You know, it's maybe it plays pretty well. Maybe its benefits are pretty good. But it really has this relentless, loud, difficult job that people don't like. And I think in ways it became a popularity contest. And while Amazon was telling the workers, oh, you don't want to pay union dues, a union is an unwelcome third party, I think the workers saw that Christian Smalls and Derek Palmer and the other people involved, they were not a third party. They were, you know, Amazon workers, former Amazon workers, current Amazon workers. And they saw that, you know, these folks were very serious about trying to make the lives of Amazon workers better because they were once Amazon workers and saw how difficult the jobs could be. So, and I also think, you know, Christian Smalls and the others really tapped into the, you know, the unionization wave, the unionization excitement we're seeing at Starbucks, that we saw at REI here in New York City with Joe Biden talking up unions. There's a lot of excitement. And I think, you know, Christian Smalls was, and the Amazon Labor Union was able to catch the wave. Let me switch to Bessemer, Alabama for a second. So as you and your listeners know, in the union drive there last year, the union got beaten that way by like 2-1, 3-1 in votes. And now the vote was much, much closer. The union is behind by 120 votes. It was like 970 to 850. And there were 412 challenge ballots. And the union believes that if it wins, you know, say 2/3 of the challenge ballots, it can, if 2/3 of the challenge ballots were for a union, it could ultimately win this election in Alabama. And of course, in theory, it's easy to win a unionization election in a pro-union state, in a blue state like California or Washington State or New York State. But Alabama is a very conservative right-to-work state. But the workers kind of, I think, got the same message as the workers in Staten. The workers in Alabama got the same message as the workers in Staten Island that, you know, maybe the pay is pretty good, but the job, can I say, sucks? And how do we make the job better? And they see that during the pandemic, Amazon, you know, had record revenues. It had record profits. They saw that Jeff Bezos's net worth increased by $50, $70, $80 billion. And they say, wait a second, we're busting our butts for $15, $16 an hour. We should be paid much more. And they see that, you know, these unionized warehouse workers with the Teamsters are often making $20, $25 an hour. And they say, you know, we want what the union workers have. So it is an exciting time. And I saw my friend Harold Meyerson just wrote a new piece for the American Prospect saying, this is kind of a sea change. You know, for so long, you know, the mentality of American corporations were just stomp on any idea of giving workers a smidgen of power and, you know, crush the union. And now at what is arguably the best known ferociously anti-union company in the country, Amazon, which is like the iconic company in the U.S. now, you know, there's this, you know, decisive union win in Staten Island. And the union vote in Alabama is really in the balance, with the union perhaps still able to win in very conservative Alabama. So it's a very big day for unions. And I think, as we've seen with Starbucks, as we saw at REI, as we've seen with, you know, these big unionization wins at museums across the country, there's a lot of excitement about unions right now. And the big question is whether the overall labor movement can somehow capitalize it on it and broaden it out.
Well, we're going to talk more about that next week and dedicate a whole show to this. I mean, again, this is a huge deal. HuffPost reports that Amazon spent $4.3 million on anti-union consultants last year. Some consultants received $3,200 a day for their work. Again, Amazon warehouse workers on Staten Island just voted to unionize. The official vote came down this morning, as Stephen Greenhouse reports. NLRB's final count is 2,650. Yes, 2,131 no. So we will definitely follow this and talk more about it next week. Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years, spending his last 19 years there as their labor and workplace reporter. He's the author of Beaten Down, Worked Up: The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Now we'd like to welcome Rachel Sanders to the show. Rachel was the deputy culture editor at BuzzFeed News and a former local rep for News Guild of New York. And Rachel has a piece in The Nation called BuzzFeed Doesn't Deserve Its Newsroom. Much of the news staff has been written off as dead weight on the payroll. What, after all, is a Pulitzer worth on a balance sheet? Rachel, before we dive in and talk about what's happening at BuzzFeed, I just wanted to ask if you had any thoughts or comments on Amazon unionizing in this historic vote.
Hi. I mean, I think my comments are just, it's really exciting. it's great to see. And I know, especially after the campaign in Bessemer has been really hard in Alabama. And I think people were, seems like, surprised to see what happened in Staten Island. But yeah, I think it's thrilling and excited to see what's next for them.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for this piece that you wrote about BuzzFeed. It's been pretty amazing to watch so many newsrooms unionize. As Poynter points out, this is happening at record numbers. So we'll talk about that later in the show, but we didn't know that this vote was actually going to be official now, so we took some extra time to talk about Amazon. So we want to make sure we have enough time for BuzzFeed. So let's start off with that first. For people who have not been following this, can you just first give us a little bit of background and tell us why BuzzFeed's union voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike?
Sure. I think, you know, there's sort of the long-term story and the short-term catalyst here. In terms of the background, I worked at BuzzFeed for a long time, for about 8 years total. I left in 2020. And for several years, sort of leading up to 2019, which is when the union for the newsroom went public, you know, people had been organizing and just thinking about ways to address issues that were coming up in the newsroom. And then 2019 was when the first really big wave of layoffs hit. And so that was sort of the final push needed to get people really on board with the union. We organized with the News Guild and basically have been bargaining a first contract ever since then. And in those years, things have still been really turbulent economically. Obviously, there was the pandemic, which had a big impact, and the company wanted to make further cuts in 2020. That was when I left and then switched to a job working at the News Guild, sort of transitioned from being a member to on staff, but kept bargaining with BuzzFeed. And so that's been a tough fight. It's been a long time negotiating with the company. And I think people are really frustrated with the way that's gone. You know, most companies, when they're dealing with a union, their biggest tactic is just delay, 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 drag it out as long as they can. So people get tired and agree to settle for less. And so far, I would say the members of the news union have just been amazing, and they're not interested in settling. And this was sort of a final straw for a lot of people, feeling like they're so close. They've been bargaining this contract for 2 years, and the company just has not made the movement they need to make. And so now they're coming to the union saying, well, actually, we want to make all these cuts that we didn't ever suggest, you know, before this point in time we would have to. That feels like it's backtracking. It's what's called regressive bargaining. And so, you know, I think people are just sending the message really clearly to the company that it's not okay. And they want to see a contract. They want to see the whole contract. And maybe these cuts and buyouts are part of that, but that the company needs to take them seriously now. And this is, you know, the clearest possible way they could say that.
You write that last week, CEO Jonah Peretti announced his intention to make another round of deep cuts. As you say, the newsroom has already been whittled down by almost 2/3. Newly minted shareholders with no interest in anything that does not directly increase profit margins had reportedly pressured him to scrap all of BuzzFeed News. 3 top editors resigned. So what are your thoughts? What is Jonah Peretti's end game here? I mean, what... A lot of people have been posting about some great investigations from BuzzFeed. What does he want to turn this organization into without a newsroom?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Jonah would tell you that he still does care about news and he's not trying to get rid of the whole newsroom. I think they've sort of been spinning this internally, my sense is, as no, we still care. We're still committed. We just don't want to spend as much, to be blunt about it. You know, I think there's only so many times you can slash your costs and reduce the payroll and get rid of people before you've just cut too deep and you've made it a place where people feel like they're not being valued. They're not central to sort of the goals of the company. And they're certainly not being respected by these anonymous shareholders who are, of course, running off to leak to the press to put even more pressure on the situation. So, you know, I think in some way, Jonah wants to have it both ways, where he doesn't want to spend the money that it takes to produce these really in-depth investigations, features, stories that take a long time, that have huge impact for society, but they don't bring in as much traffic on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, they're trying to pull back on that while still saying, we care about news. We want to do news. And it's just reached a point where I'm not sure they can do both.
Stephen, I mean, you've been in journalism for quite a long time now. What are your thoughts specifically? Have you been following closely what's going on at BuzzFeed? And if so, what are your thoughts about what is happening there?
I've been following it some. You know, I've done a lot of writing about the wave of unionization among journalists, you know, which is part of this wave of younger people and often white collar workers who are embracing unions, seeing it as an important tool, important way, important weapon to improve their lot, get better job security, get a voice at work. And BuzzFeed, like several other prominent, you know, media companies, has been very, very slow in negotiating contracts. And it's very frustrating that, you know, you're dealing with these well-informed, knowledgeable workers who want their employer to give them a fair deal, to treat them well. And then employers sometimes really, really drag their feet. And, you know, we saw that at some, you know, blue collar factories where there were strikes this year. And I think a lot of, you know, journalists, you know, get very, very, very fed up when they see their employer doing the same thing. And Jonah Peretti really tries to walk this tightrope. He wants to, like, maximize the value of the company, maximize the profits, the share value. And he also, you know, wants to come off as treating his workers well. And I think a lot of workers feel that Peretti is leaning way too much towards profits, towards making investors happy, and not enough about making workers happy. And it's totally understandable that the BuzzFeed workers are so pissed off.
And it also brings up just so many issues around funding journalism, right? Because that's such a very difficult one nowadays, Stephen. So many people are searching for answers about how to ensure that journalists are paid well, so they can do important work. What are your thoughts about the financial elements of this?
So, you know, there have been several cross currents. You know, a lot of, you know, we've seen a lot of local newspapers really go bankrupt, die because they no longer had the ad base. We saw a lot of a lot of big city newspapers have a very hard time because they lost real estate ads and auto ads and all these, you know, to the internet. So, you know, a lot of the news media, the traditional, the so-called legacy news media, has really been struggling. And one result of that is many news organizations really got cheaper about how much they pay their workers. And I think that's a big reason. You know, if you ask me one of the two big reasons for this wave of unionization journalism is, one, is this consolidation and closing. And a lot of people felt we need a union for stability to give us a voice during this wrenching shakeout. And two, because of the financial problems of the media industry, a lot of companies really got stingy about pay and giving raises. And that really angered a lot of workers, too. Now, so that's in the traditional media. And then, you know, a lot of investors, you know, form these, you know, digital media companies, Slate, Vox, Vice, BuzzFeed. And there was a lot of original, you know, a lot of big money in that at first. And there were a whole bunch of websites. And in many ways, too many websites to go around. You know, there weren't enough eyeballs to support all these websites. And 3-4 years ago, people were predicting a shakeout among, you know, these websites. And BuzzFeed realizes that, you know, it might have, you know, in ways became overambitious. It's having a hard time, you know, supporting its business model. So that's why it's been making these cuts. And again, as we saw, you know, when there are cuts, when there's instability, a lot of workers say, you know, this is not what I signed up for. I wanted, you know, a good, steady job in the media where I'm treated with respect. You know, I'm highly educated. I'm very literate. I can get jobs elsewhere. So if you're not going to treat us the way we think you should treat us, we're going to unionize to try to ensure that we have a powerful voice to make sure you treat us the way we deserve. So that's why I think we've seen unionization at BuzzFeed, Slate, Huffington Post, Fox, Vice, many other places.
Yeah, so many places. And final thoughts from you, Rachel, on where you think this is going. Mary Cavallaro, a chief broadcast officer of the SAG-AFTRA News and Broadcast Department, said, "I started AFTRA in 95. I can tell you what we're seeing in the last 5 years is unlike anything I've seen before in terms of organizing newsrooms."
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me is what gives me hope, that this has really become a situation where it's much less common now to find a newsroom that's not unionized than one that is. And I think that puts pressure on employers to offer better benefits, better contracts, because it becomes, you know, a way of attracting and holding on to talent. So I think it can only be to the good that we've reached this sort of saturation point across the industry with unions. You know, they can't fix everything. And I think that's what people at BuzzFeed News have been dealing with, is that even when you have a really strong union, even when you're negotiating a contract, there are going to be problems that come up if the company's business model is so fundamentally volatile or really doesn't prioritize the journalism that you're doing. So I think that is sort of the essential heartbreak here, but it's definitely offset by the fact that there are so many other places where people have unionized, have really, you know, taken agency in the situation. And if they're not getting what they need from their bosses, they'll get it with each other. And that's great to see.
Rachel Sanders was the deputy culture editor at BuzzFeed News and a former local rep for the News Guild of New York. And you can find her Nation piece, "BuzzFeed Doesn't Deserve Its Newsroom," at yourcallradio.org. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years, spending his last 19 years there as its labor and workplace reporter. He's the author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back to talk about this historic vote by Amazon warehouse workers on Staten Island to unionize.
Very nice to be here. An exciting day, and wishing everyone well and a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.